That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Well, you're trying.
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today, we look at the 1985 action-packed romantic kung fu music video, Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. The Last Dragon features William H. Macy and Chaz Palminteri in bit roles, supporting Timac as Bruce Leroy and various other actors that put on a masterclass in cultural appropriation. Also, quite possibly the only movie with the maximum allowable amount of El DeBarge allowed by the FDA. With me, do his wisdom thing, is Dr. Anthony LaDon.
Steve, when you sit in a movie theater, do you have a preferred location? Do you want the back row? Do you want middle, center middle? Where do you like to sit?
I want to be as far away from the breakdancers in the aisle as possible.
Otherwise, you get angry and do a double foot stomp.
Right, and I don't want to have to unleash that fury. I don't like to be too close to the front row because that's where you'll get a lot of hair thrown at you or blown at you from the fights that break out.
Now, Bruce Leroy, he sits right in the front row,
he's in the front corner.
He's got the worst seat in the house.
And there were seats available. There's a whole balcony up there. I mean, it's, you know, when you look at the crowd.
are you suggesting that he might not want to sit next to some of these fellows?
Right. Yeah, there might be. I can't imagine that theater smells great.
There's a lot of tank tops. I've never seen so many tank tops in a movie.
It is a humid theater. I mean, that theater could double as a 14-year-old boy's room.
Am I the meanest?
Sure enough.
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
Who am I?
Sure enough.
I can't hear you.
Shogun!
The Shogun of Harlem. Yes!
So Shonuff has a specific seat. He's got a row that he's selected. And
he can show up late. He shows up super late.
He shows up. He's probably seen this movie before. He shows up late. He's got an entourage. And he's got seats selected. He has Beast clear out the two white girls who are in his row. And but here's the thing about this particular movie theater. It's not just a place to watch movies. It really is the stage for Shonuff to strut his stuff. I mean, everyone's there in one spot. He's got enough authority to shut down the movie for a little bit whenever he walks in. Mm-hmm. This is his home court advantage.
Well, and he's been gone. He's been gone. And this is what, I mean, the movie doesn't answer this. And this is...
He's been gone?
Well, I mean, he's back. But he's made it very clear that the Shogun is back. So
he was on hiatus? Was he was he, you know, sort of on a little walkabout? Was he training? You know, there's so many questions. Like, I mean, this movie.
I think he went to the restroom.
Is that what it was? He was. The entourage went. Yeah,
his football shoulder pads needed adjusting. Went to the restroom. He was gone for maybe 5 minutes. But every time he enters that space, he needs
beast crunch wipe.
He needs the full ceremony. So yeah, no, he's got a certain seat selected. Is that where you would sit in the theater?
Sure. Yeah, I would. I would definitely be in Nuff's row.
Not in the balcony. He doesn't. He it's sort of like off to the left of the aisle.
I've seen this movie a lot, and I've never actually taken the time, and I will do that in the next viewing to see like who was in charge of wardrobe and what other work have they done in Hollywood?
They just raided Barry Gordy's closet.
I mean, it is bonkers, the outfits that are in this movie theater. This movie theater is probably like, I don't know, the Harlem equivalent of the cantina in Star Wars.
That's exactly what this is. This is the cantina scene. And I mean, there's a lot of different little homages in this film. You've got the whole Wizard of Oz thing, right? When Leroy finds out that there is no master, it's just a computer. Goes back into the back room, realizes that there is no wizard. There is just this little guy. But in this one, it's a computer who's pumping out fortunes. Very disconcerting. In fact, this is the moment where I
wept,
marked my childhood ending. Yeah, I wept, and my parents never taught me about Santa Claus, and so I never had
who does show up in this movie.
Yeah, no, I realized that there was no master, but I did start believing in Santa Claus after the final fight scene of this movie.
Well, Santa in this movie has a mohawk, which we don't see because he typically has his Santa hat on. And so what we saw is a dark side of Santa, the same way that your god died. You found out that Santa is if you unleash Santa to this is what he does the rest of the year. This is summer Santa.
I feel like this is him blowing off steam, you know, like he gives himself a couple weeks out of the year to just kind of like break Amish, and
in his mind kung fu is naughty. This is how he unleashes.
Santa's mohawk is an interesting choice, so it's suggesting either like a punk rock or maybe he's a Mr. T fan. Maybe both.
This movie's a rich tapestry. I mean, it's like there's just nowhere to know where to begin with this,
so,
right?
I mean, yeah, there's no way to. I didn't know where to begin. I will say this though. I was thinking like, if ever we wanted to end this podcast, like this would be a good one to go out on. Like this is almost the climax of our history of podcasting together. Like we were built in a lab specifically to cover this movie on a podcast. And then I thought, well, maybe it's even more than that. Maybe this isn't the pinnacle of our podcasting career. Maybe this is the teleological outcome of our friendship. Like maybe it's possible that that this is us peaking right now, Steve.
Yeah, it's quite, I mean, it is, there is sort of a multiverse quality to this. I mean, I had seen this movie in high school. A friend of mine called me, and this is going to sound crazy to all of our millennial and Gen Z listeners. We don't have any, but in the event that for some reason, you know, your son.
Oh no, we're going to get them. They're going to start listening in about 20 years.
That's right. But this, so what would happen is that I got a phone call on a landline from a friend of mine and says, turn it to channel 44. And I did. And he says, have you seen this? And I said, I don't know what I'm watching. And he says, I've never seen this. And we just sat on the phone and watched The Last Dragon together. And then, so then time goes by and I kind of forgot about this movie. Mm-hmm. And then I'm house sitting. My wife and I are house sitting and we have our young son. You come over with a VHS tape recorded from TV.
Yeah. See, I was trying to remember how this all went down. I was thinking, I think it was a VHS tape, and I think I gave it to Steve and then took it back. I think I gave it to you as a gift, like, here, happy birthday. Here's your present. It's a VHS tape that taped a movie off of the television. And then we watched it. And I said, okay, I need to take this back because I need to record it for myself. And then I never gave you the VHS tape back. Right. Does that ring a bell?
It does. And I thought it was ironic that when, you know, you're asking, like, you know, where is this streaming? And I'm like, well, you have the tape, so.
So there's more to that story. So I was working on Catalina Island with a group of, you know, four or five other year-round staffers, and there wasn't a lot to do. There was no internet. We were literally on an island together, doing maintenance around a camp. And this woman I was working with named Carolyn Martinez had this movie, and she popped it in, and my eyes just popped out of my skull. I thought, I need to show this to Steve. And so when I was back in Sonoma County, I had asked to borrow the tape. And she said, you have to get this back to me. I'll let you borrow it, but you have to get it back to me. And my idea was, I'm going to take this home. I'm going to have a copy made of this. This is all really, really janky technology we're dealing with here. And I didn't do it. I didn't know why it didn't happen, but I didn't make a copy of the tape. I just decided I'm just going to go show this to Steve. So I showed you her copy of the tape, which I needed to return, never made you a copy. And so you got screwed out of your present.
So this really does keep with the theme of felonies and fugazis.
Yes. Your whole birthday present was a fake. And I don't know if that's a felony on my part, but felonious act of damage to our friendship, at least.
Well, you were kind of in your felonious bag, if I may bring our listeners into a little bit more. I know they're jonesing for more Last Dragon review, and we will get to it. But during the same time period when we were house sitting, you and a friend broke into the house, and stole my video camera.
So that you could, in my mind, it was a borrow. I feel like it was a borrow in my mind.
There was no note. There was no nothing. We woke up and our video camera, which we had like spent a lot of money on, which we didn't have a lot of money, but we wanted to invest in, like, you know, our son's, you know, Christmases and things like that. Mm-hmm. And you guys took it and then you went around and kind of broke into other people's houses to film them and give them goodies and all this stuff. And you thought this was hilarious. Well, we called the police and had them come over to
this was Christmas morning. Investigate.
Yeah, this it was Christmas morning.
This was what I was doing on Christmas morning. I was breaking into people's houses and videotaping them wake up from
video camera.
With a borrowed video camera. I mean, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the police report says one thing.
I mean, look, in my defense, how much have you actually watched these old videos of your son at 2 years old?
Well, that day, none.
So now that we've established that I'm the Eddie Arcadian of Sonoma County.
Yes.
I appreciated you forgiving me in the end. I did return the video camera. You were pretty pissed. You pretty pissed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when you've spending Christmas with the police doing a police report, your wife's crying, mm-hmm. and you don't even have a copy of The Last Dragon to console you.
Mm-hmm. it was not my finest hour, and I'm older and wiser. I rarely break into people's houses on Christmas morning anymore. I would like
speaking of bad Santa,
I'd like to play you something. So that's just a little snippet of a song that Eddie Arcadian is going to try to get out into the world.
Right.
And
it's a banger. It's a certified banger.
it's called Dirty Boy. And it's not just a song, Steve. It's a story. And the story is about a woman who finds dirty magazines in a guy's suitcase. Mm-hmm. And
he wants her to participate.
He does, now that she's seen it all.
Dress her up in peekaboos, body oil, and roller skates. This guy's specific.
And they're trying to get her song onto the Seventh Heaven TV program.
Yeah. Laura Charles. It's kind of like Soul Train, but it's more like, I mean, Soul Public Transit. I mean,
it's kind of Soul Train meets like UMTV Raps, I guess. It's like
Soul Subway, maybe.
Yeah. So Angela, she's sort of the up and coming star that Eddie Arcadian is going to use to cross over into the music industry. Because I think at this point, he's made most of his bones in video games.
Right.
And I think probably a pretty successful video game magnate. He's got his video games in pizza shops around New York City.
Exotic fish.
So he does have a flesh eating fish in mm-hmm. his apartment, but I got the sense that's Rock's fish. Is that Rocco's fish?
I think it may have been Rock's idea, but I mean, obviously Eddie had signed off on it. He says, you know, he said, like you said, keep it around, but come in handy.
I mean, at one point he notices it that it's there, and then he's like, I thought I told you to get rid of that.
Right. Like, yeah, that giant fish tank that he had, like, I mean, he didn't even notice Rock throwing like a big old like chunk of meat in there, like just moments before.
Whatever's in there, because we don't actually see it. Whatever kind of monster lurks beneath that green water, it creates lots of bubbles.
Yeah.
Massive amount of bubbles. And it can just tear through a frozen pig leg.
Yeah, an Amazonian jacuzzi fish.
So Eddie Arcadian, clearly the villain of the movie, motivated, I think, by greed, but also, I think he legit goes crazy by the end. But he surrounded himself with kind of 80s homages. So to me, Angela is clearly a Cyndi Lauper homage, right?
Yes.
Hairdo, even the look of the video.
Right.
It's sort of a Cyndi Lauper ripoff. And then Rocco is absolutely Rocky, right? He was going to be the great white hope, but now he's a bodyguard, a fish lover, you know. And Rocky, he has turtles.
That's right, yeah.
Cuff and Link. In this movie, Rock, who's an ex-boxer, has Amazonian jacuzzi fish.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like a parallel universe, right? Like, I mean, if Rocky never gets his shot, right? Like, he was kind of a two-bit, mm-hmm. you know, enforcer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if he had never gotten his shot at the title, this is what, you know, inevitably would have ended up happening. So in many ways, I don't know that this isn't a in the Rocky universe. Just
so yeah, right. This of, could is yes. This is sort of inspired.
This is by... Rocky II.
This could work easily as Rocky II for sure. So Angela kind of realizes what she is to Eddie Arcadian. She decides, oh, all of this glamour, maybe it's a facade, you know, maybe it's all a fugazi. And she sees that what he has done to Rock, now he's doing to her. And she confronts him. And for me, this was the stand-up performance of the entire movie.
All this glamour and stardom, and it's all for you, isn't it, Eddie?
You know, Angie, a lot of girls out there like to trade places with you.
Why don't you just walk out? Go have a nice, normal, boring life.
Well, to tell you the truth, Eddie, it couldn't be any more boring than hanging around here with all this cook in my hair while you guys go play cops and robbers.
Where you gonna go, Angie? Without me, you're nothing. Without that outfit, you're just another no-talent dental hygiene school dropout from Kew Gardens getting by on her tits.
It's pretty rough.
And in the end, Eddie, you know what? You're nothing but a misguided midget asshole with dreams of ruining the world. Yeah, also from Kew Gardens. And also getting by on my tits.
Got him.
Not even the nominated.
Where do you think you're going?
It's probably a Meryl Streep year.
Elocution class.
What for?
She's leaving to go to elocution classes at the end.
Mm-hmm.
what
sure is it?
because if you're from Kew Gardens, you talk like an old timey gangster. Mm-hmm. And in order to sort of enter into regular society, you need elocution classes.
And it's kind of cool now because, we're in a time where Biden is forgiving all elocution class debt. So it's fantastic. It's just a really cool time to be, you know, to be alive.
Well, and I feel like this movie kind of foreshadows that because a lot of the people in this movie are trying on different accents. I mean, New York City is so cosmopolitan that You got people trying all kinds of different cultures for size. You know, you got the Green family who is trying on the Italian restaurant.
Right.
You've got the fortune cookie guys who are more street than even Leroy Green.
Well, yeah. I mean, then you kind of got, you know, the whole basis of the movie. It feels. Guy's name's Bruce Leroy. It's
Bruce Leroy, that's what they call him. It's a black kid from Harlem who's decided to sort of embrace all things, I guess, kung fu culture generally.
Mm-hmm.
And he's become pretty good at it. He's absolutely ascended through the ranks.
As demonstrated by the very well-displayed symbols. His master shows him in the in what appears to be a rough draft diorama of his journey.
Sure. Right. He's got one more level. But it could be that he is at that level. I mean, it's one of these times in a movie where you're told something at the beginning, but it really does the impact of what you're told at the beginning doesn't really take on full meaning until the end of the movie because of the golden belt buckle. And I was going to ask you this, is this the most prominent golden belt buckle in film history in this movie?
I'd have to. I mean, I'm trying to think of another situation where, I mean, there's
outside, I guess, of Rocky's, like, maybe Rocky's belt, right? It's not really like a
boxing
buckle.
Belt would be probably the closest thing.
Yeah, not really a buckle, though. What?
Is this movie a musical?
Kind of.
What y'all looking for?
I am looking for the master.
Ain't no masters here, dude. Ain't no slaves either.
Is this not his fortune cookie factory?
The master, he doing his wisdom thing.
I seek only wisdom of the master.
You want wisdom? You buy a fortune cookie.
Take a hike, cool breeze.
Yeah, baby.
Please, I must see the master. It is very important to me.
Look here, chump. The master don't see nobody. Especially no jive coolies.
Yeah, he don't see no one who don't know how to get down, baby. Right, you down. Dig, bro? You too square.
I love the idea that if indeed there is a master, the only way you have access to him and his wisdom is if you can get down.
He doesn't hang out with anyone who's square.
Right. The master's had, like, sometimes it's like, oh, you know, you have to either go through this, like, maybe some sort of a test of endurance or wisdom or some strength, something that gets you to a point where you earn the right. This is just simply like, you know, these three guys go in and they go, it's like, who wants to see me? Oh, you know, it's this guy's kind of a jive coolie or whatever. And they're like, well, does he get down? Yeah, he gets down. He can come in. All right, you know.
So, I have a lot to say about these three guys. They're attracting quite a crowd out in front of their fortune cookie location.
Imagine being so good at lip syncing that that people stop what they're doing. I mean, wow.
Just a lip sync. There is some.
No. There's a presentation.
It's choreographed.
Yeah. Arguably, the tiniest male nipples on display through a mesh shirt in cinematic history.
that's not bury the lead. The mesh shirt is notable.
Yeah, true.
I did own a mesh shirt once. I don't know if you ever owned a mesh shirt.
Did you go full? Just let it all hang out underneath the mesh shirt?
No, it was sort of like, okay, so let me paint a picture for you. It was sleeveless.
Okay.
Army green, mesh just underneath the collar, and mesh over the midriff. But it had sort of like a strip of solid cloth across the chest with a tiny, and I mean tiny, zipper pocket at the lapel there. And
it was like a designer was trying to save some material.
And in keeping with my criminal background, this was a shirt that wound up in my suitcase at the end of summer camp. Oh. And because there's no way that my parents would buy that for me, but I somehow it came home with me. And I honestly don't know whether I stole it or whether it just happened to fall into my suitcase or whatever it was.
But, somebody was like, I'm not bringing this thing home.
I did bring it home. I did wear it a lot one summer, probably around 85.
With the captain's hat?
The captain's hat was a little...
A little ostentatious with that outfit. I was
no captain's hat. This one. But I did have at that point the kind of the strip sunglasses.
Ooh,
with just one solid a lens. You know, a little bit like Geordi from Next Generation.
It's amazing how even as children in the 80s, we gave off cocaine energy.
What was the most ostentatious thing that you ever wore as a kid?
Boy, that's a great question. See, I was always pretty self-conscious and didn't want to, like, draw a lot of attention to myself.
We've flipped roles. We've definitely flipped roles.
Yes.
I'm much more conservative with my dress now. And you famously
I am actively writing down mesh shirt, no sleeves. Tiny Pocket because I want to put it in my search engine.
Sure. Very tiny pocket. Like maybe fit a quarter in it. Like it's not, it was a tiny little zipper.
What would that even be for?
Probably for a single quarter. Just in case.
Just, I mean, I got one video game in me.
No, it's sort of like, if you wear this shirt, we're just going to assume that you're going to wind up in the gutter somewhere. And so here's a quarter so you can call home and ask for help. All right. So these fellows, these three fellows who run a pretty successful fortune cookie factory, sure, who have access to some really decent technology.
Entrepreneurs.
To me, these guys are just living their best lives. That no one is having more fun in any movie ever than these three guys.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment.
They've got the computer doing all the work for them. And what they do with their day is they lip sync in front of the building to adoring fans. Adoring fans. And then at night, they're tricking black men into teaching them how to play craps, which they don't know how to play.
Right. Right. They smoke weed. They drink booze. Eat pizza.
I mean, how much weed do you have to smoke
to think hopscotch is craps?
Yes. All right. So the veil is a little bit let down in this because you can tell, like, they're actually not as hip hop as they put on, because
I know, isn't that something? Big reveal.
Apparently there's not a big gap between hip hop and hopscotch.
This is a it's a powerful film, right? I mean, it's all about self-discovery. Like throughout. I mean, this whole thing is like, it's just,
you don't have to be who your society tells you you need to be, right? You can be whoever you want to be.
Well, and definitely a lot of Eastern, you know, themes, which are the journey to within, mm-hmm. especially, you know, where you kind of maybe have a Western look at like a higher power or some sort of way to, like I said, in many ways, like sort of like brings you into some Star Wars thematics of like the Force and all that. But so the whole, I mean, this whole movie is a journey, right? The whole, I mean, everybody's on a journey and it all essentially leads to self-discovery, right? What, and everybody ends up finding is that what they really were looking for was either within them or right in front of them the whole time. Mm. His brother, who is so standoffish and searching for, like, he's looking for satisfaction and self-worth through a date with Laura Charles, and who wouldn't, right? She's an intoxicating performance by Vanity. I don't know if I've ever seen a more interesting woman on screen. She sings like maybe she's in a horror movie.
Yeah, it's a little sort of thriller homage there, but it's also a little bit demonic, because what is the lyric to her song? It's we don't burn angels, suggesting that
we don't burn angels on the fire.
We don't burn angels on the fire, suggesting that whoever they are going to burn is a little devil. Very, very.
Yeah, let's do it. We should probably do a close reading of the Seventh Heaven lyrics, because I think the a lot of the story is being revealed through this song. Mm. Because I mean, obviously, this movie is Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon, right? So there's a fair amount of crossover, right, between them. I mean, the soundtrack is important, and there's not so subtle advertising or promotion for probably people that have been signed through the label, right? Like the song Fire, that they, for some reason, take a lot of time to just watch while they're getting ready for a big kung fu showdown.
Right.
that that just pushes Arcadian over the edge. He just screams the title of the song. Fire! Just an amazing little way to like there's kind of like a, you know, life imitating art thing going on. Like Eddie Arcadian is trying to force the issue with his protege to get onto this, you know, get her video played. And, mm-hmm. but meanwhile, you kind of get the sense in the background, Barry Gordy's like, and make sure to put this act in there. I want to give a little teaser for Charlene.
Mm-hmm.
So Seventh Heaven lyrics, I found a place.
By the way, I wanted to just say about Charlene, I was convinced for years that that was Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, I could see that.
Anyway, yeah, let's talk about the lyrics of Seventh Heaven.
All right, so I found a place, for you and me to go if you want to get in. Ha ha. Step up in the elevator, press number 7. That's all you've got to do to get to Seventh Heaven. Obviously a very biblically sound number.
Very good.
Right? All right. So basically saying, look, the entrance to Seventh Heaven is easy. It's actually, this isn't a narrow road, right? Like, so this is where you sort of maybe move away from sort of some of the maybe more Christian ideals, right? Like the idea that the path is narrow. That's all you got to do. All you got to do is want it, right? I can't believe what you're going to see once you get inside. I know you're coming alive. If you want to play around in my school, you'll obey my golden rule. All right. So I can't believe what you're going to see once you get inside. It's okay. Well, once you get inside, where? Once you get inside the elevator? Once you get inside Seventh Heaven? Look, this is back to the concept that he's going on a journey, mm-hmm. and where he's really going is inside himself, and he's not going to believe what he sees once he gets inside. And I know you're coming alive. If you want to play around in my school, you'll obey my golden rule. And this is the rule, right? I mean, this is what I assume, right? Keep it up. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Keep it up and around. I'll never let you down. Going up, I'll keep it up and around. Do I ever? There you go. So, I mean, that's cryptic for sure. And then eventually I found the place, finally found my trace of love inside. I pray you'll arrive on time. Step off the elevator. Check the incinerator. Heaven never burned an angel on a fire.
Oh, my. Oh my
God. I can't explain how I'm going to feel once you come inside. I know you love my ride. You can fool around in my room and enjoy my golden rule. And then the golden rule, once again, is keep it up, up and around. I'll never let you down. So there's a test, right? You step off the elevator. You check the incinerator. This is the true test, right? Because heaven never burned an angel on a fire. If you step off that elevator and you check the incinerator and you get burned, well, you're not worthy. You're not ready.
Mm. That's interesting. I had always kind of taken that as this, you know, sort of a, it's not really heaven. This is a debauched place where they're going to have sex.
This is Seventh Heaven.
When you actually get to the seventh level of heaven, you find that they're burning all kinds of people except for angels.
And here's the thing is heaven is like a bunch of people just getting off at the lobby. They don't even realize you could press 7. That's all you have to do.
Wow. Now, does this mean that she is part of his final level? Like does that mean that she is part of him achieving the last level of Kung Fu?
The elevation
includes his elevation with her.
So let's look at the whole movie, right? When we first see this movie start, right, the movie, what's happening in the credits, we're seeing very close-up imagery of Bruce Leroy, famously played by Tymack, doing all of his kung fu work, right? He's doing the moves, he's out there, and then we see him training. He's like chopping out, arrows as they're getting like shot by him, right? I mean, he's doing all of it. So it starts with him doing all of the moves that he's learned, that he has mastered. That's why he's going on the next level. Every level he moves up means that he's mastering more moves and he's getting the art of thinking without thinking and all of that stuff. And how does the movie end? He calls out to her, can you show me some moves?
Yeah, yeah. Can you teach me some
moves? Isn't that amazing? I mean, isn't that powerful? Because his whole journey began because of the moves he's mastered. And at the end, he realizes in this part, in this next level, this seventh heaven, if you will, he doesn't know any of the moves. So this is the obvious next level. He was trying to get to seventh heaven the whole time.
So, right. So he's accomplished everything that he's going to accomplish as a kung fu master.
On this level.
He's even got the glow. I mean, let's be honest.
You've got the glow, but you don't know how to please a woman. What good is the glow?
But in order to sort of, let's say, consummate your full humanity, you're going to have to start living life outside of the dojo.
You can't be ready to give to others until you have learned how to appreciate and love yourself. This movie's powerful, right? I mean, it's evergreen. It's I feel like this should be played in public schools as kind of like a coming of age. It should just be required. I feel like if I was a marriage counselor, for example, I'd make you watch this.
And play this in the background.
Yes. It's showing once again that there are masks that we wear. There are facades that we put on. There are things that are about ourselves that we're not ready to show. But here's the thing about the dirty boy. And like, I think, it's easy to sit there and say, look, she's disappointed, but what if he was honest from the gate, right? What if he showed what he was about from the jump? Don't hide it under a bushel. Let it shine. Don't be afraid of who you are. If you want to reach the upper level, mind, body, and soul must be one.
Is Bruce Leroy
every man? Yes.
Mentally challenged?
Does
he have struggles? Because in some aspects of his life, he's kind of a savant. He's actually got a whole dojo where he's teaching acolytes to his particular kind of training. And yet when he goes home, his younger brother is acting like kind of an older bullying brother.
Well, it's funny because I think it's really easy to see the younger brother as kind of antagonistic, right? Like he needs to come full circle and he has that moment at the end where he's like, hey man, that ain't a cornball. That's my brother, you know, powerful words. And, but also in this movie, I think that maybe is underappreciated is that Bruce Leroy kind of goes through the same transformation, right? Like he sort of kept his family sort of at arm's length. I mean, he did all these polite bow type thing, but he was so obsessed with kind of going to a different culture as opposed to being a part of his, like the one he was being raised in, that maybe he's lost a little touch. So his brother really does a really good job of like, he sees that. And I think it's like, he understands that he is starting to step into a world that maybe like he can't really be himself unless he embraces where he comes from, who he surrounds himself with. And I think, you know, obviously I think Laura Charles is a catalyst because, you know, he has feelings he's never felt before because again, maybe he's not well. And then, but then when he meets these fine gentlemen, these fortune cookie entrepreneurs, titans of the fortune cookie industry, and they're kind of embracing a different culture. Like I think it becomes a little bit of a mirror.
And noted karaoke enthusiasts as well.
Yes. So, you know, I think he comes face to face. This is sort of like when, you know, if I may borrow from Star Wars again, when like when Luke confronts Vader in the, you know, in the cave of Dagobah, right? Like you have this, like he sees himself in that and he's like, oh my gosh, like where am I headed? Right. And so this movie has that sort of theme going on as well. And so I think there's an opportunity for self-actualization, realization of the whole thing. And it, you know, and why is Eddie Arcadian ultimately the villain is because he never gets to that point. Show enough is a sense of purity. I think there's, I mean, yes, he's a villain, but I think he's kind of like, this is the path, right? Like if you know, what is it? What they say? You either die a hero or you live long enough to be show enough.
So I think Show Enough actually is a very interesting character in this because he kind of gets shown up by Bruce Leroy at the very beginning. Bruce Leroy says, Those who are bound by desire can see only that which can be held in their hands, right? So he kind of like, he gets schooled. He gets schooled by Bruce Leroy at the beginning. By the end, he doesn't take the briefcase of money. Shonuff is not as superficial as Bruce Leroy suggested earlier. Either he's taken that lesson or he always knew the lesson. I think he already knew it because he's got the glow too, man.
He's got the glow too.
He's right. He doesn't have the glow as fully, perhaps, as Bruce Leroy, but he absolutely has the glow and he rejects the money. He's in it for the fight. He feels like he's on a journey of his own. And
that's the only guy that stands between show and total supremacy.
Total supremacy, in the words of Beast.
Right.
So the movie is showing these two kind of on a collision course. I'm not sure what Shonuff's next level is going to look like.
Total supremacy.
Yeah, well, it could be total supremacy.
That's the
next level and realizes like, oh, this was all a lie. This is all empty in the same way that Bruce Leroy does.
Well, see, and that's, and it, there is, it is like the two sides of the coin, right? Because Bruce Leroy is out there trying to find the master. What is Shonuff claims? Who's the master? Shonuff. Like he knows he's got the glow. He sees himself as the master. One thing that's interesting too about Shonuff and his use of the glow. He's a pretty decent steward of the glow. Like he could have brought the glow out in the movie theater and just, you know, away with these guys. He doesn't even bring out the glow until right towards the end of the Bruce Leroy face off. So there's something to be said. Like now there are there are scholars that suggest that Shonuff's glow, because it is based sort of on personal interest and this idea of total supremacy, that's why it's not fully realized. He can't access it. It's actually born from anger. And if you look, when does he actually use it? When Bruce Leroy is kind of towards his weaker state, it has less power. It's more of the scholars call it a show glow, because it's more theatrical than it is actually effective. When Bruce Leroy's glow comes into effect, I mean, it actually regenerates him, right? And it not only regenerates him, but causes, it's explosive.
Right. So I guess the show glow is more destructive, whereas the Bruce Leroy glow is more sort of self-generative.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you probably have read the same articles.
So I was just going to say Shonuff's hiring practices are pretty inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Super progressive.
His entourage includes people of different races. He's hiring women. He's hiring women that are maybe on the fringes of society. He's hiring women who aren't really great at karate.
Or like dental hygiene.
All kinds of
no people. Benefits. No dental benefits in the Shonuff clan.
Oh, come on. He's not wealthy. He's eschewing briefcases full of money. He doesn't have money to pay out health care.
He could probably use throw an accountant in the mix in the posse. That is, I mean, going back to speaking of progressive, let's go back to that movie theater. I mean, that is a progressive movie theater. I mean, there is a lot going on there.
You got bodybuilders who are wearing pink tank tops.
Barely, yeah.
this poor Native American fellow gets his...
You have a Rastafarian smoking a huge blunt.
Oh man, that
it's very inclusive theater. I mean, that theater is impressive. I also love that, you know, a guy with the last name Arcadian felt compelled to get into the arcade game business. I mean, I'm gonna form a merger. I'm gonna form a merger with this guy who's in he's in the music industry. He has this thing called Touch Tunes. His name is Jeff Jukeboxenstein.
I mean, Eddie Arcadian has struck the fear of God into the people of Harlem. Poor William H. Macy is he's fearing for his life.
Oh my. He's a real heavy dude, man. I mean,
he's a real heavy dude. I think this is William H. Macy's first film. I also think it's the first film of Rudy from the Cosby Show.
Cosby Show, yeah.
What was her name? What was the actress's name?
Keisha Knight Pulliam.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And then, of course, Chaz Palminteri.
Now, you mentioned Chaz Palminteri, and I didn't see him in the film. Maybe I wasn't.
He's the car driver when they get Lord Charles in the, and then Bruce Leroy dispatches him by kicked yeah. through the open window.
Yeah,
everybody in that that group, those thugs in their suits, all were wearing white socks. I thought that was an interesting choice. Just something I noticed.
Of all the wardrobe being in this film, that's what really caught your attention.
Yeah, yeah. Not the saggy yellow Bruce Lee suit that was already dirty that Bruce Leroy was wearing.
Also, it's really hard to notice him. He doesn't have any lines, but I did notice in the back of the pizza parlor, I do believe that's Cockroach from the Cosby Show. A young
I think you're right. Yes,
Cockroach.
Yes, that is accurate.
So, yeah, so there's a little bit of Cosby Show DNA in this film. Unfortunate, because this film was so progressive that it ends up getting tainted in retrospect, right?
The actor who plays Eddie Arcadian, I just saw him in Maximum Overdrive, but didn't recognize him.
I know. Here was a question about him, and I wanted to get your take on this. So he's pretty comfortable with his male pattern baldness, right? Yes. Pretty wealthy. You'd think that he would be wearing a hairpiece, but the only time he ever wears a hairpiece is when he goes into Shonuff's dojo.
Right. Interesting.
He's got the full wig on, and I'm wondering why you think he chose that moment to wear the wig.
Yeah, because it's not like he's in disguise. You know, he wants to be known. It almost feels like... you know how Cobra Commander would wear the hood when he was in the lair, but then he would wear like the helmet and the faceplate when he was out in public. Like maybe that's sort of what it is.
You lack imagination, Destro. We possess the ultimate weapon of control. People trust television. It's their friend.
Just more comfortable when he's in his apartment. When he feels like there's a possibility that his face may get put in with the jacuzzi fish.
Right.
Well, why risk kind of goes the piece?
It's a subtle, like I said, it's a subtle way to show that Eddie Arcadian is not getting into his own personal elevator to get to his seventh heaven, right? Still self-conscious, still trying to pretend he's something he's not. And the fact that she goes to elocution class, she's like, look, I know what I need to work on. And that was a huge moment.
Steve, is there a trope, a device, or a cliche that you enjoyed in this film?
God, I mean, where does one begin? I really like it when there is a friend in the group that really doesn't match the group. And really serves his only purpose is to, like, rip his pants.
You're talking about the young portly boy?
Yeah, who's like he's like a heavy metal fan. He's got like Motley Crue patches and a fedora. And then they inexplicably lift him on something that he could easily get on. And we hear the sound of pants ripping, but his pants never rip. So I don't know if his scrotum tore open or what. But
was that the same?
Where he goes, ah, shit. I watched that scene. Like Heather, like watch this movie all the time, and she knows it's like, oh, here we go. He's gonna rewind this like at least four times.
I like a fight scene that includes a lot of thumbs ups. Like,
oh man,
you've got like all of the worst villains of New York City gathered into one place, and Bruce Leroy has to fight them all. And you know, he's got people on his side, but these are not people who are fight ready, right? They're not, these are not battle tested warriors, and some of them are, you know, sub 4 feet tall. But what they all have in common is when they take a guy down, they're going to give each other the thumbs up. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should talk a little bit about the dojo coming to his aid. Johnny, sure. Another guy who was pretending to be something he wasn't, but then when he was confronted with an actual situation, ended up being really great at Kung Fu. You may recognize Johnny. He was in another movie, I believe you've seen, called Penitentiary 3.
Oh, yes.
The one with Thud. Yes. Yeah, Johnny is in that.
Okay, so Johnny's interesting to me because everyone else in this movie is trying to be something else, right? It's like the Asian guys are trying to be black, the black guys are trying to be Asian, or the black guys are trying to be Italian or whatever. Johnny, his whole view is, look, if you just kind of posture, people are afraid of an Asian guy that knows karate. If I just lean into the stereotype, that's gonna work for me. It doesn't really work for him, but sometimes you gotta fake it till you make it. And he makes it. When he gets onto that stage at Seventh Heaven, he can absolutely take down
anyone and everyone. And he can get it with the nunchucks too, by the way. I mean, that's legit. I like the incorporation of breakdancing and fighting. I also like it when the younger brother, rest in peace, by the way, we lost him a few years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Breakdancing accident?
Yeah, he was complications from a shooting, apparently. Oh, unfortunate. He was also in New Jack City, by the way. When he's trying to escape he's tied up, so he kind of breakdances his way out of it. And my favorite part is
he's like, not just tied up, he's sort of like, he's kind of like Houdini tied up. It's like,
right,
there's chains and ropes all up and down his body.
And he breaks out of it. But the best part is that there's a scene where they could have just edited it or maybe shot it again where he can't break dance the ropes off very well. So he sort of pushes him with his free hand, which also demonstrates he could have just taken them off. So it's a wonderful little tribute to the overall attention to detail that's in this film.
I was watching an interview with Ty Mack on this. But one of the things that I found out was that every scene that they shot for this movie, they used. It wasn't like that there's a bunch on the editing room floor.
There's not a director's cut somewhere.
There's no director's cut. They used every bit of footage that they shot. It's a bold move. And it kind of created a something of a little masterpiece.
I like that. I like the leaving. Yeah. I mean, because there really is. I mean, it is also a kind of a miracle that you can have a movie where you use every single scene and every scene is value added.
Is there a tweak that you would make to this movie to improve it? I mean, you did text me and say it was a perfect movie.
Right. So I'm saying I want a prequel. I want to know where Shonuff was. I kind of want that journey.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was kind of surprised there wasn't a sequel to this. It made good money. This movie did not suffer financially. Almost an immediate cult classic.
Yeah, which is kind of wild, right?
Yeah, because usually, if you think of like a cult classic, it usually doesn't do well, and then people discover it on VHS or something like that. It was just never kind of marketed to mass audiences, I guess. Unfortunately,
this would have been like a great reboot, like with the Wu-Tang Clan somehow involved.
I was watching this, and my lovely wife sat down for the last 10 minutes of this.
Has she seen it before?
I honestly thought that she had. It's possible that she has and just forgot. How do you forget? If you've seen this movie, how would you ever forget that you saw this movie?
Right. Anyway, I mean, it's not...
According to Sarah, she's never seen it. And she sat down and she said, "Is this supposed to be serious?" And I was like, "Why don't you watch a little bit? just try it on for size. You be the judge." And then, you know, 5 seconds later, she's like, "Oh, I get it." And then she said something that I thought was so profound I would write down. She said, "How are any of us normal after surviving the 80s? Now, for me, it wasn't until the 90s that I actually saw this. But, you know, this has got a lot of 80s in it.
But you were wearing mesh shirts with tiny pockets. I mean, mm-hmm. regardless of whether this movie was a part of your life, it was in your DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Steve, is this movie better, worse, or on par with a Ron Howard film?
This is a really great question. I mean, this is a great, I'm glad we're ending on this one, because it is, I think maybe Ron Howard says, "Hey, let's take another shot of that one. That one scene." Like maybe he cuts a thing or two. But I don't know if he's got the courage
mm-hmm.
to tackle this level of grand concepts and genre mashups.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it, I mean, I think I look, I watch this movie a lot. This is like there are movies that I rewatch over and over again. This is one of mm-hmm. them, you know, obviously Lost Boys, somehow Howard the Duck. And I love the music every time. I love the dialogue. It's like if you made paella out of a bunch of different like sugar cereals. It's like so many flavors. I don't even know if they work. But I just, oh my gosh, it's just perfect. So I'm going to give it a Howard plus three.
It's interesting. I think that when we covered Dune, the first movie, we had Alicia on, and she suggested something called the anti-Howard.
I think what you're saying is that Howard is still stuck in sixth heaven.
I'm going to give this a Howard plus seven.
Because, that seems right.
Because eventually Bruce Leroy does reach seventh heaven. And, you know, biblically, seven is the number of completion. And this film does indeed complete our Felonies and Fugazi season. In style, I might add. In style. Steve, is there a half the battle underground moment in this film?
To reach the upper level, your mind, body, and soul must be one.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go ahead and quote Bruce Leroy again. "Those who are bound by desire see only that which can be held in their hands." I do feel a little bit bad. I feel a little bit bad for Bruce Leroy. I feel like everyone in this movie, with the exception of Laura Charles, kind of treats him pretty badly. You know,
yeah.
his dojo's holding him on an unrealistic pedestal, and his sensei is straight up conning him and laughing at him, duping him with a golden belt buckle that he says was once owned by Bruce Lee. Just mean.
He may have been trying to kill him with those bow and arrows the whole time. Okay, it's just you don't know.
Yeah. I mean, his little brother just abusing him, and forcing him to ride him to the theater like a donkey.
While he rapped.
While he kind of half-heartedly offered inept raps. Yeah. Poor Bruce Leroy. Just being abused left and right. He can take down a goon, though. I mean, he can take down a goon like no one's business. Good work, Steve. I think we've done good work today. I do feel like this we hardly talked about this movie. I mean, we could easily do a full season on this movie.
I almost wonder if you could even just do an entire podcast. Like, the whole podcast is just a weekly check-in on a different aspect or theme of this. I mean, you could just the music you could talk about. You could talk about the stunts. You could talk about the wardrobe, as we mentioned. We just barely scratched the surface.
Yeah.
I bet you we could get a lot of these people to interview because I imagine they've got some time.
I mean, I feel like we didn't even touch the El DeBarge video.
Which is a significant portion of the movie.
I almost play the whole video.
Mm-hmm. Sure do. If that's why I'm saying it feels like a musical, right? I mean, Laura Charles, like, she sings a whole song.
Yeah.
There's lip syncing that goes on. There's
Dirty Boy. You
know, and also Test Drive. She also.
Yeah, don't forget Test Drive.
Yeah. I might watch it again this weekend.
This summer, we enter a new era of Star Wars.
You mean the dawn of the Star Wars canon timeline podcast?
Yeah, sure, that too. But I was obviously talking about The Acolyte. We've got to cover that on the Lorehounds.
Oh, but the Star Wars canon timeline podcast is exactly at that point in the timeline, the end of the High Republic, 100 years before the prequel trilogy. We've got to cover it there.
Why not both?
Okay, deal.
It's the first live-action Star Wars outside the Skywalker saga. Nobody can miss this.
Listeners, kick off your hot lore summer weekends with scene-by-scene breakdowns of The Acolyte, found in both the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast and the Lorehounds Mother feed.
And the Lorehounds Star Wars feed.
Wherever you like to listen, a couple of days after each new episode is released.
Steve, we have an iTunes review from Don't Hassle the Hoff.
Nice.
5-star review. It says, podcast exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you.
So far, I like it.
Fantastic. Basically, the two guys who sometimes dubiously make each other watch movies based on the theme is in scare quotes here, of the season, and then casually shoot the breeze about it. Steve and Anthony make a great double act, and their comedy flows very naturally. They will even surprise you with some quality insight. So now you know what to expect, and knowing is half the battle.
Very nice.
So, theme is in scare quotes here, Steve. Just a subtle commentary on how well we follow the various themes of our seasons.
Yeah.
Now that we're wrapping up Felonies and Fugazis, how well do you feel like we followed the theme of the season?
Well, we abandoned one.
We did. We had to abandon one, for sure. In fact, we abandoned a couple.
Which I guess would sort of be a crime against our fans.
Yeah, you know, that's sort of felonious podcast.
Yeah, and I guess in a way, we not only adhere to it in terms of the films we watch, but also in the manner in which we deliver.
Or you could say that Felonies and Fugazis was itself a fugazi. It was a fake. In reality, we really wanted to cover Hero at Large.
It's funny. I mean, we had all this very specific criteria, and we did. It felt very legal. You know, like we felt like we were very much like really focusing on the letter of the law.
The intent going in was Anthony would like to cover some of his favorite crime dramas.
Yeah.
And then it sort of like got loosely like there's got to be a crime in it. Well, I mean, come on. Now that you've broadened it to that extent, why not cover My Cousin Vinny?
Yeah, how many of the ones that you actually wanted to cover did you get to?
I think there was a few that I didn't think I wanted to cover, but I'm absolutely excited that we did. Like Pulp Fiction, I wouldn't have occurred to me to cover that.
Right.
I did really want you to watch True Romance.
Mm.
So True Romance was one that I wanted to get you to watch. There's a number of crime dramas that we kind of paired off because of the time period we chose. Like I would really love to watch something like The Drop with you, or watch Inside Man.
Right.
I don't know if either of those are movies that you enjoy.
I've never seen The Drop, but I do enjoy Inside Man. I've seen it several times.
I recently watched Tower Heist with Ben Stiller. I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh, how is that?
I quite enjoyed it. It's kind of a silly, stupid heist movie. So, I mean, if you go in thinking like, I want this to be sort of a thriller, that's not it. This is a comedy.
Right.
So, it's a Ben Stiller thing. Like, you should go in thinking like, it's got Ben Stiller, it's got Eddie Murphy, this is going to be a comedy. And if you go in thinking that, I think it's quite enjoyable.
I'll give it a look-see.
So we love iTunes reviews. If you want to leave them for us, usually on your phone, you just click on the podcast app and scroll down and, you know, leave a review, click that link, and you can do that. And we would appreciate it. Hey, let me ask you this. I was thinking that it might be worth revisiting the theme. I don't know if we'd ever want to do that, but do sort of a Felonies and Fugazis sequel season, and kind of open it up.
Well, I mean, certainly I got painted in the Hero at Large corner. I had no choice by virtue of our categories.
There's no other options. It took three iterations of our draft for us to arrive at Hero at Large.
Oh, well.
I'm going to accept about 5% of the blame on this one.
Well, let's talk about punishment, right? I mean, like, you earned it.
All right. Now, I don't know when we are going to return as a Properly Howard thing, because going forward, we're going to be working on House of the Dragon podcast, which is going to be featured on Double Dragon and then over at the Bald Move Hot D feed. And then, fingers crossed, we'll get season 2 of Severance, and then we'll be busy with that.
Right.
So, who knows when we will return for Properly Howard. But when we do, it'll probably be a lot like this. We'll probably pick a theme. We'll probably screw it up.
Yeah.
Let's imagine, like, maybe it is a few months before we return to this feed and something horrible happens to you, Steve. Is there anything that you would like to say to our fans if this is the last time you're going to address them?
Wow. Well, that's great. I would love to shout each and every one of you out by name, but to get through all 13 of you, we'll just cut into our podcast. Let you know that you are dear to my heart.
Cocoon of horror.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.